We're going to start with a work session on Senate Bill 24.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 24 is the bill that dealt with biological substances, and you should have the dash 3 amendments in front of you, and you should also have an engrossed copy of the dash 3 amendments that I'd like to go through. This bill, the background on this bill is in Oregon we have a destructive device statute. And a destructive device, we looked at that, and it does not include a biological or chemical substance under current Oregon law. So this bill deals with that and makes it a crime to, if you look at page 1 of the dash 3 amendments, a person commits the crime of unlawful development, manufacture, delivery, possession, or use of a harmful substance, toxin, or delivery system, and these are defined in section 1, if the person, and then here's one of the amendments, with the intention of unlawfully harming a person or animal, delivers, possesses, or uses, and then again it has those defined terms. And this, the dash 3 makes this a Class A felony.
Right, and then we're leaving it up to the commission to...
Right. Mr. Chairman, originally, as the bill was written, it would have been a Class B, and we would have set the guidelines for it. Instead, it's going to be a Class A felony, and it won't be set necessarily by us, and then it can be applied, and we can even, I mean, if you wanted to, you could ask Phil Lemon to not set it so that it would be up to the judge to apply the, you know, the crime would be free to apply it as they will. Then, Section 3 of the bill, which is on page 2, beginning at line 6, this deals with a hoax of a destructive device. Now, again, a destructive device would be a bomb or something like that. This includes in the definition of hoax destructive device something that an object that reasonably appears to be a delivery system, but is an imitation of a delivery system. And a delivery system is the apparatus that would deliver or disseminate a harmful biological substance. That could be, I think under the statute, it could be an envelope, it could be a vial, it's broad. I also will note, because I know there was some, went over this with some of the lobbyists, the state of mind requirement that the district attorney must prove on this is the same for if you were delivering a hoax bomb. It's if the person knowingly places another person in fear of serious physical injury by possessing, manufacturing, selling, or sending a hoax destructive device. So that's that part.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Madam.
The penalty for this is Class A misdemeanor, correct?
That is correct. On page 6 of the hand engrossed dash 3, you have a new crime of menacing in the first degree. Menacing is...
Not menacing. Menacing. Right. I know you were thinking that. I know.
I like it.
And this is an anti-terrorism, not anti-tourism.
No. Tourism. Tourism.
Okay. I should have... Sorry.
I'm still getting email on that.
Okay. Section 8, page 6, line 13. This is a new... basically an aggravated form of menacing. A person commits the crime of menacing in the first degree if, with intent to cause fear of death or serious physical injury, the person circulates a false threat of fire, explosion, catastrophe, or other emergency likely to cause alarm. And this would incorporate a false bomb threat, a false explosion, a catastrophe, like a terrorist attack, things like that. So, and would also, I think, incorporate a, if you said that there was anthrax in the building, etc. So that's the new crime of menacing in the first degree.
All righty. Is that it?
That's it. I should also note that there's a -4 amendment. The only change in the -4 amendment is it changes in page 10. If you look at the -3 amendment, if you look at line 10 of page 1, it would change the word bacteria to bacterium. That I spoke to Virginia about that, and she felt either one was okay. And that was just something that one of the drafters did. And the -4 amendments would leave this as a Class B felony. It would stay as a Class B felony instead of a Class A felony. Susan Russell is here. And Susan and John Bradley worked on this. And Susan would, I think, rather have the -4, which would make it a B felony. And the district attorneys wanted it to be an A felony, which would be the -3 amendment.
A, B, whichever. Okay. Ready? Where are we?
Mr. Chairman. Yes.
Senator Burdick, then Senator Rendell.
Do we have fiscal impacts, A felony versus B felony?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, we do not have a fiscal. It's going to be a very difficult fiscal for them to come up with. Because you're creating a new crime. It's going to be very... we don't have one. I didn't ask Judy to work one up yet because I think it's going to be difficult. What I would suggest is I will certainly make sure that this committee knows what the fiscal is once it comes out and we can... look at it at that point.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't see an actual copy of the -4 amendment. Have they been printed?
Mr. Chairman, they have.
Thank you.
All righty. Senator Ringo, if you're ready or.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd just like some clarification on whether this bill makes any conduct illegal that currently would not be illegal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, yes. As I said, destructive device does not include a biological or chemical substance. So a person who, for example, sent a letter saying that it was anthrax to the Capitol would not be committing a crime of a hoax destructive device because destructive device is defined as something akin to a bomb and not a chemical substance.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I would prefer that this bill be limited to that set of circumstances. It appears to do a lot of things, increases penalties in other areas. And a lot of this behavior, I think, is very sick behavior, but it's not necessarily something that I want to keep ratcheting up penalties on. And I would agree that the kind of conduct Craig just described ought to be illegal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ring, I want to make another point. We kind of went at this the way you're talking about, that that was the first thing that we looked at was this hoax of this. What we realized is it's also not a crime in Oregon currently to manufacture a real chemical agent or biological agent with the intention of unlawfully harming a person or animal with it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So, to prohibit the hoax conduct, we looked at also prohibiting the actual conduct.
You're telling me that currently in Oregon, if somebody is part of a organization that's developing, say, a biological agent with the intent of committing murder, that's not illegal?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, I think that's correct. I think that... Of course, you could charge attempt murder if you could charge that they took a substantial step.
Okay.
Okay, intentionally took a substantial step, but on the review of the law, and I believe the Department of Justice was asked to look at this by I think it was actually Governor Kitzhoffer, and that's what they come up with. I know Pete Shepard's here, and I mean, if you'd be more comfortable with his take on that, I'd be definitely defer to Pete.
Is Pete back there somewhere? Where's he hiding?
There's no back.
Hi, Pete. Come on up here. Share your heart with us. Do you like this or not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Shepard. I am the Deputy Attorney General, and I'm always pleased to be here. We did look in our review of Oregon law for gaps following September 11th. We did look at the question of whether we had gaps in our criminal law, and we did identify an area of law that needed to be addressed, and that was the question of most particularly the production of delivery of a hoax device, as I think, in fact, you all may have experienced yourselves. The mailroom right across the hall here was the scene of such an event. And I would say that some of these offenses could be charged as an attempt or a conspiracy. Each of those, in the case of the attempt, you'd have to demonstrate that the person had taken a substantial step. And I think, frankly, that my view would be that if a person assembled the materials for a biological destructive device, that would constitute a substantial step and probably be chargeable under current law.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify that, so you believe that under current law, if somebody's manufacturing anthrax, and there's evidence to indicate they were doing that intending to disseminate it among the public and to kill people, that's a chargeable offense?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, I think that would be a chargeable offense.
And what? First-degree murder?
Well, it would be an attempted murder or an attempted assault. Be a variety of other, probably a conspiracy chargeable if you could prove an agreement to carry out such a kind. What we did focus on, however, that first in the area of the hoax, it was our judgment in our review of the terrorism gaps in Oregon law that we did need to do something more with, particularly with respect to hoaxes, because those are not easily charged under current law. And then there's another consideration. I think this probably goes more to the question of what this before this committee this morning, and that is the criminal law also performs a labeling function. It identifies with specificity by charging what it is that what wrong has been committed. And one defect in current law is that it doesn't distinguish between a person who delivers a biological device and a person who, because that charge is just an indistinguishable attempt under current law. And so the bill, as I understand the amendments before you, would have that additional advantage.
All right. Pete, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Senator Brady.
I don't know if this is for Pete or for our own council, but I was one of the people who asked for this hoax device.
Yes, you did.
Thing to be looked at. And the incident that stuck in my mind was after the anthrax scare was running rampant in our country, some woman, I think in McMinnville, thought it would be just hilarious to send her friend some anthrax, some powder, and say it was anthrax. And I just, and you know, to her, it was a joke, and I'm probably making up these facts because it's been a long time, but to her it was a joke, but in fact it used a lot of law enforcement resources and cost a lot of money. And so she didn't really have any ill will. I mean, she wasn't trying to kill anybody. She just was taking up a lot of law enforcement resources that she shouldn't have been able to do that. So my question to our council, I guess, is with that kind of motivation, is that still going to be a Class A misdemeanor?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, to answer that, if you look at page 2 of the -3 amendments, line 7, if a person commits the crime of possession of a hoax destructive device, I think the key is then the state of mind of the person. If the person knowingly places another person in fear of serious physical injury by, you know, and then sending. So knowingly, as we've gone over, is an awareness of. It's not a conscious objective of. So I think the answer is yes. You could prosecute that person. It would be a Class A misdemeanor. Secondly, the page 6, line 13, for the person whose conscious objective is to cause fear or death, fear of death or serious physical injury by circulating a false threat, like, you know, I've put anthrax in, you know, then that would be a C felony. So I think, I hope that answers your question as far as the state of mind.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that on the record.
Thank
you.
All right. Senator Ringo.
And what's the penalty for a Class C felony?
A Class C felony, the maximum would be 5 years and a $100,000 fine, but it's in the sentencing guide. It would be going into the sentencing guidelines so that, you know, I think that, for example, a Class C felony like assault three, say, or assaulting a public safety officer, is a 6 on the guidelines. That means that a person with no criminal record would have a presumptive probation sentence. It's up to the commission as to where they put it on the sentencing guidelines.
And you might also, correct me if I'm wrong, any judge can treat a C felony as an A misdemeanor if they choose to leave.
There is, they could. I mean, I think there's a portion in the statute that says that they can give misdemeanor treatment. And that is usually done after the sentencing's occurred, and they later, you know, after you've done well, so to speak, they can reduce it. A district attorney, at current law, might be able. I think what would normally happen is you would charge an attempt or something. Say that if you always want it to be, you know, treated as a misdemeanor, which in this case might be a little difficult. But yes, I believe there is a statute, and I could look at it that lets a judge
Alrighty.
Do that.
Alrighty. This is a work session. Senator, whomever, Bernie?
Chairman.
Madam Vice Chair.
Well, we should probably have a little discussion. I actually prefer the dash 4 amendment to the dash 3.
Okay. You have the privilege of moving whatever you want.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash 4 amendment.
Senator Bernie moves the adoption of the dash 4 amendment. For discussion? Objections to the dash 4. Senator Walker, Wisconsin.
I like the dash 4 better than the dash 3.
Any objections to the motion? So objection. Motion passes.
Chairman.
Senator Birdie.
I move Senate Bill 24 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Birdie moves Senate Bill 24 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any additional discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Objection. Motion passes. Thank you very much. And Senator Ringo, you like here now?
No, I wouldn't.
Sense that that might be the case. All right.
I'll carry it if you don't want it to pass.
Senator Starr wants to carry it.
I think we'll let Senator Starr carry it. We'll have a neutral party. Everybody knows my biases, so, right. 3296, public hearing. Yep.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, 3296. Let me make sure I've got your...
I told you it was going to be confusing.
Mr. Martinez is here for this bill. This is a bill that would make it a crime for a person to unlawfully possess a personal identification device if the person possesses the device with the intent to use the device to commit a crime. And then it has a definition of this and then of what it would be. It's a Class C felony, incidentally, which is what identity theft itself would be. A person commits, Section 2, a person commits a crime of unlawful possession of fictitious ID if the person possesses a personal identification card containing identification information for a fictitious person with the intent to use the personal ID card to commit a crime. This is a Class C felony. I think that that, incidentally, is already covered by identity theft. And there is a dash one amendment that I want to make sure everyone has to this. And this would keep this new crime in line with identity theft in that it is an affirmative defense if a person who is under 21 commits this offense by possession of an ID card solely for the purpose of enabling the person to purchase alcohol, so that it wouldn't capture a young person who has a fake ID for buying alcohol.
Thank you.
And for an under 18-year-old for buying tobacco. Those are the dash one amendments.
All right. Mr. Martinez, briefly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. This is one of three bills that will be before your committee in the next few weeks, hopefully, on identity theft. This one, I think your counsel did a nice job explaining. We did work with the Criminal Defense Bar on the Dash 1 amendments to satisfy their concerns. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions? Senator Walker.
Well, I'm just glad we have the Dash 1 amendments and beginning to feel we're wanting to throw everybody in the slammer these days, so I'm pleased to see that.
Not everybody, just crooks.
Yeah, I know, but some people become crooks just by stupidity.
On accident?
Yeah.
All right, you're accidental crook. All right, any further discussion? All right, work session.
Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I move the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill
3296. All right. Senator Burdick moves the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 3296. Discussion? Objections? No objections? Motion passes.
Chairman.
Just one
second.
Okay. We'll hold the conversation. 2 minute recess. Council needs to talk to you outside.
Yeah.
Is not exclusive that you can ask for them either under the public records law or under the statute in the workers' compensation statutes. And then subsection 5, section 5, which is line 4 of the Dash A8 amendments on page 2, repeals the existing statute. It simply wasn't possible, given how that statute was drafted in 1929, to add all these components to it and have it read intelligibly. So what section 4 is doing is replacing the current statute with something that essentially says the same thing but is in a more readable form. And then on lines 7 and 8 on page...
Yes, go ahead.
If you get back to section 5, ORA 656.702 is repealed, I take it that that's the part of the statute that applies specifically to Safe Corporation.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, that's correct. And then on page 2, lines 7 and 8, there's an applicability provision that explains that even though you're repealing the existing statute and replacing it with a new one, the new one applies to everything that's happened before and everything that's going to happen afterwards, so that nothing ends up getting derailed by what you're doing.
And I think what the objective here is, in all of the controversy over the SAFE issue, and there's been a lot of controversy, it's in my long-held opinion that those records are in fact public, and that that particular quasi-public agency has done everything it possibly can to limit access to otherwise public records. I think the Court of Appeals said, in fact, that that is the case, that they were hiding behind the public records law, which they had no right to do. And this amendment is intended to say that we said, or the legislature said what they said, we agree with the Court of Appeals, and we're codifying it in statute so that it's very, very clear that they must turn over those records and make it public. In fact, if you read the case, which we can get copies of, it's offensive to me that SAFE told the litigants in this case that they had to provide $50,000 up front for copying costs before they would release the information. that's objectionable, in my opinion, on its face. It's in the case. You can read it yourself.
Mr. Chairman, question about the court action. Is this case on appeal now to the Supreme Court?
Not yet.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, I'm not aware of the corporation or the Department of Justice's plans for additional action on the lawsuit. I would suspect that that decision has yet to be made.
Mr. Chairman, I just, you know, I'm certainly in sympathy with what we're trying to do here, but to jump in the middle of a of some case law that hasn't finished being developed, I'm just wondering if that's...
Well, we have the power to finish it. In fact, that's one of my intents, is to keep the state from appealing a case that they're going to lose and spending more and more money. Particularly, participants, insurers, are paying for all these appeals. And it's, again, it's my opinion, you can dissent from it, that we are, in fact, the board of directors for SAFE. The legislature, we created them. They have no privilege or right to withhold information from us. They do it on a regular basis. In fact, the director of that agency that told me that we fight subpoenas all the time. When I suggested in the 2001 session that we would subpoena their record, I found that offensive. I still find it offensive.
And, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, our belief is that if you adopt these amendments in the bill and it becomes law, that that would stop the lawsuit.
Well, I guess the question before the legislature is, did we really mean, or did the statutes, do you agree with what the court's opinion of the statutes were, and that is that these records ought to be public, that they are in fact public, and they ought to produce them. I mean, quite honestly, with SAFE, and this is my personal opinion, hiding behind public records protections for proprietary information that generally applies to outside corporations, to me, is offensive. But anyway, we've got more amendments. We'll talk about these issues. I'd like to see these adopted. I'd like to see the bill move with the amendment in it and stop the lawsuit. But we've got other issues we're going to talk about that are probably equally as controversial. Senator Ringel.
Well, just as a comment, I wholeheartedly support your efforts in this regard. I think that we need to shine the cold, harsh light of publicity on SAFE. And let's just make the records open.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
Just to let you know where I'm going, I totally support these amendments because I normally don't like to step in and mess with the court, the appeals process. But in this case, I think it's warranted because for years we've been after SAFE to give us information and they keep hiding behind the veil of, yes, we're an independent agency. No, we're a state agency. I mean, they're like in this never-never land. And I actually think we should pull them back in and have them be an official state agency so we avoid this problem. But they're not. And this is the best way to get the information that we are rightfully entitled to as legislators.
All right. The controversy will continue until it doesn't. So that was thank you, Mr. Shamoff, for coming up and sharing with us. We have a list of other individuals who want to testify on other amendments and parts of the bill. So the first to sign up was Janet Billups. Ms. Billups, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Janet Billups. I'm a legal counsel for the Oregon Health and Science University. And I am here to request on behalf of OHSU that Senate Bill 3903 with sections that address animal research be amended, or that the bill be adopted with respect to that section that we have proposed amendments to. The legislation that we're requesting gets at a very real problem of personal safety that is faced by our employees who do animal research, as well as the classified level employees who clean out the cages, and the mom and pop farm owners who provide animals, farm animals, to our facilities as in furtherance of animal research. In recent years, animal extremism has grown to a threatening and threateningly lawless level. It's not a theoretical threat anymore with respect to OHSU. It is a real threat. For example, animal rights extremists have assaulted one of our research administrators on an out-of-state business trip to the point where this was a trip to Florida, to the point where the Florida State Police assigned a Florida State Trooper to accompany our researcher at every stage of his business that was being conducted in Florida. Our researchers at the Primate Center have received envelopes with razor blades inside that are accompanied with death threats. Our researchers have had their names and home addresses and telephone numbers written on sidewalks with instructions or a call to arms from the readers to seek out these people. Their names have been misaligned. They've been referred to as Dr. Death and whatnot. The most recent experience or example that I can relate to you happened only in the last month. There is an organization called SHAC that started off in Great Britain. Its stated tactic that it brags about is to get its memberships to carry out acts of violence against lower-level employees, secretaries, janitors of commercial laboratories or other research facilities. It advocates finding suppliers, vendors, financial institutions, as well as suppliers of animals, finding those people who work there and committing acts of violence against those companies. The purpose, their strategy, is to terrify everyone away from supporting animal research. And the means that they are employing is, admittedly, on their part, violence. The most, as I said, a very recent example just in the last month was there was a conference held in Southern California. The conference was for animal rights activists. One of the speakers at the conference was the leader of this group called SHAC. His message to the members of the conference was to, as he said, learn and know your enemy. Get all employees' social security numbers. Get the names of the janitors, the brokers, and the auditors. Use that information to attack them. Back to back, the next speaker was a local fellow named Matt Russell, who some of you may have heard of. His stated career objective is to close down the Primate Center and other forms of animal research at OHSU. He was the next speaker on the agenda. Following up with this message of seek out the employees, seek out the suppliers, the other message being nonviolence is a strategy. If it doesn't work, don't use it. His follow-up message was, now that this laboratory that SHAC has attacked is on the verge of bankruptcy, are we going to go to the Primate Center next? And the consensus from the members of the conference was, yes, that's where we're going next. And this is in California. It's not just a local group of people meeting at their home. The literature that was passed out as curriculum, the first page of the curriculum for the attendees was from the Foundation for Animal Liberation. Those who profit from death of animals have names, faces, telephone numbers, and homes. Now get out there and find them. With a brick or with a match, make your outrage heard. This is a direct threat that has been carried out on an increasing level towards our employees and vendors who are engaged in legitimate and lawful and highly regulated federal research. We have worked hard with the Newspaper Association to try and craft a bill that does what is the most essential first step in protecting these people. That first step is deprive them of the information that they need. And the first piece of information that they need is a name. We do not want to be in the position of continuing to have to provide to the hands of criminals the names of the fellow who washes out the cage at the Primate Center, or the woman who feeds the animals, or the veterinary technician who takes care of the diarrhea, or of the mom-and-pop farm owner who provides us with the animals. That name is what I would say these criminals want. And those names are what they have used in the past in a very, very effective campaign of violence and terror against animal research with the goal of ending animal research.
Senator Walker.
Ms. Bills, I need to interrupt you for a moment. You've been in my office and we've talked. And I understand there are some of these groups that are outrageous, and they do engage in criminal conduct. I'm not going to deny that. They exist, and your information is compelling. But there are groups who do not engage in such criminal conduct. And with this bill, I'm concerned that those groups will in turn be denied access to information to show that perhaps one of the researchers that you are employing at your facility has a history that would raise an eyebrow before coming to OHSU. And I'm very concerned about that, and I want to be able to balance these two issues, and if you could address that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I agree with you that what we need to do is balance everyone's need. And one need that we recognize and commit to is the need for the press and other legitimate groups to have access to information, for them to assess information to assure themselves and their constituency that we are, in fact, complying with the law and that our animals are being treated humanely and in accordance with the law. Let me give you an example of how I think this bill carries out that balance, because there is a huge amount of information. You use the word information. The information that is still available and untouched by this bill is voluminous. For example, every researcher who wants to propose or carry out a research protocol involving an animal must submit a very detailed description of the proposal to a committee called the IACUC. That description has to go into detail about how the animals are being used, why does an animal have to be used, how will pain and suffering be minimized, what is the justification for using these particular animals, and what is the care plan for the animals during the course of the research. All that information is available. Once the protocol is approved, incidentally, the protocol also has to go mostly, this is mostly funded by the federal government.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify, when you say that information is available, you mean available to the public?
Yes. When I say available, I mean available under the Public Records Act. And this bill would not change that. All that information would still be available under the Public Records Act. What would also be available is then the consequent care of the animal, how the animal is cared for or treated during the course of the research, what food the animal is given. There are many federal regulations that apply to animals that don't even apply to humans. For example, we are required to pipe fresh air into the animal care areas twice a day. That type of animal care has to be recorded both as a matter of federal law and also as a matter of good science and good sense, because we are regulated by the USDA. We have to be able to demonstrate to the USDA on their random site inspections that we are, in fact, complying with the law and treating our animals well. So all of the information about the animals' regular care, as well as the animals' medical care, is still available under the Public Records Act and untouched by this bill. What we're seeking to do is sever the link.
Hang on, Senator Walker.
So I think you're about to get to the point that I don't like. And that's where we don't get to know the name of the researcher. Because you can have all the proper protocols in place and you can have everything look great on paper. But if you have someone running the project who has a history of not following the law or not following protocol or doing things that would raise an eyebrow, how am I going to know that? Because you're not telling me the name of the researcher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, you will know that first and foremost, as by reference to the records. And the truth is, how the animals are cared for, or whether they're not cared for, is going to be found in the animal medical record, the animal care record, as well as the protocols that are developed in anticipation of that. It's the same as a medical record that you might find in a hospital. That's the first line of information that you would be seeking in any event. What we're trying to do is sever the link between the technician that provides, that works on that animal, and the particular animal's care, because it is that link that the animal rights extremists are seeking and, in fact, do use in their campaign of violence against animal research.
Isn't it, Mr. Vice Engineer, sure, isn't it true, Ms. Phillips, that you can currently protect the vital information of a researcher or anyone involved in the project? You can keep their address, phone number, all of that information private. Can't you already do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, we can keep the home address of our employees private. We cannot keep the home address of vendors and suppliers private, and that's why the bill refers to home addresses, because that's not currently within our capability of keeping private. What we have difficulty with now, which is the point of this bill, is keeping withholding from disclosure and keeping private the name of the particular employee, if it's a janitor or whoever, in connection with the information that's being sought. But it is correct that, employee addresses are can currently be exempt from disclosure as a conditional exemption. The vendor home addresses are not.
Well, do you have a problem with adding the vendor, the vendors in this bill to protect them under ORS? Greg Chamoff, our legislative counsel, just brought me the ORS. It's 192.445. Why can't you just add vendors under there to protect their home addresses? Because all you have to do is show that their personal safety is in danger, or I believe their business is in danger. I think what you told me is they've targeted their vendors and sent out letters asking people to target the vendors.
The bill as it's currently structured does extend protection to the vendors. That's the impact of the bill. Moving any portion of this to Section 445 destroys the purpose that we're seeking here, to be honest. Also, with respect to protecting employee addresses, that's not an exemption that's under .445. That's a conditional exemption under 192.501. But the section that you are looking at, we did consider that and talk through that in negotiating changes to this bill and a narrowing of this bill with the Newspapers Association. The problem with .445 is, first of all, it's not an exemption statute. The exemption, the two primary exemption statutes are 192.501 and .502. 445 applies to all of us who might have a personal situation that requires us to prove on a case-by-case situation that we are the target of some kind of one-on-one violence. For example, a spouse who's been the victim of domestic violence, who has a restraining order, has to take that restraining order or any other information and evidence to prove to the public body, see, this is what has happened to me. This is why you need to exempt and withhold my my home address. It doesn't provide the kind of protection and exemption that the community of animal research, the research community, needs, because what that requires is for each and every employee, again, if it's the technician that takes care of the animal's diarrhea or the person who is feeding them, it requires that employee to personally make a case that that employee has become the subject of and the target of particular violence. That's not how the animal extremist community operates. They find their message, their instruction is get the names of any of these people, go hunt them down. Because if they support animal research, that is a good enough reason to target them for violence. I don't know if that helped answer your question, Senator Walker.
Well, it does partially, and unfortunately I have to leave because I have to go give testimony across the river to bring justice and fairness to the state of Oregon. But
and other high causes.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I wanted to stay here and listen to the ACLU, and I'm not. I mean, I understand the concerns. I really do, because these people's lives should not be in danger, and the information you provided was unbelievable. But there's a balance here, and I'm not sure we're meeting it. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just in the minority here, but I appreciate your comments.
Senator Brady.
Do you have just a couple minutes before you have to go?
I have to be across the river at 9:30, so I do not.
Because I was going to ask a line of questions about what happens if this amendment would go under the conditional exemption part of the public records law. And so I would like you as legal counsel to walk us through what would happen if you had a reporter from the Oregonian come up and say, you know, we've looked at the protocols, we've gotten those from the public records law, and we believe that your researcher who's doing this particular research on this particular group of monkeys, let's say, is not doing it properly. We have very serious questions from our interviews with blah blah sources that this person is a real problem, and we want you to give up that name. What happens at that point?
Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair, the process under, first of all, the initial exemption that this was under was an unconditional exemption. So we started off with a request that it be unconditional and not questioned. We moved it to the conditional exemption as a result of negotiations to try and narrow the bill. The process that happens there, the first step in the process is not written into statute because it's simply part of the practice, and that is we meet and negotiate with the newspaper reporter or broadcast journalist. And in the 15 years that I've worked at OHSU, I have taken part in those discussions and those negotiations on countless occasions. And the goal, and the real goal, is to be able to provide the reporter with the information that the reporter finally is satisfied that he or she has in a sufficient level of information that reporter can field a credible story. And so negotiation is always the first step, because not only in this exemption but every other exemption that applies to public bodies, our goal is to balance the media's needs with our needs for privacy. That's always the first step. Because it's a conditional exemption, if we cannot arrive at an agreement, the reporter always has the option then of saying, look, the public interest really demands that this information be provided. Now, it is the burden of the reporter to demonstrate that the public interest demands it. And there's no science to saying how that is proven or what the outcome is. But the art of it is for legitimate and reputable journalists, there is a huge amount of credibility and argumentative persuasive force that comes in arguing the fact that the public interest requires disclosure. Also, as a corollary, I want to repeat the fact that we do have to provide all of the written information that describes how the animals were cared for or not cared for.
That's correct. And just to shorten this up a little bit, if the reporter is just not happy, say that at the end of the day, the reporter wants a name, you won't give the name, the reporter feels there's a public interest, where does the reporter go if they can't get satisfaction from you?
The reporter then, in our case, goes to the district attorney's office, which, depending on the county, it would be Michael Schrunk in Multnomah County. State agencies would take that request to the Attorney General's office, but local public bodies and OHSU go to the district attorney, which in Multnomah County there is a deputy district attorney who's designated just to handle and address public records requests. And that person is the decider, is decision maker, not us.
And then, as I understand, it's appealable if they still don't like that decision, they can go to court. Is that correct?
Yes, they can.
All right. Thank you. We have a few other people who need to chat here, so.
I have one more request, Mr. Chair. We have we're requesting that an emergency clause be added to this.
Right.
That was actually the suggest of the House committee. Thank you.
We have the amendment. Sounds like a good thing to me. Lee Beyer, Public Utilities Commissioner. I apologize, Commissioner. I should have respected your time and gotten you up earlier.
You were fascinated by the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senators, we're here to support the bill this morning. We have a very less glamorous or interesting piece of the bill. It's a little amendment that I think adds some quality to the public's records law and also saves some money, and that's why we brought the piece there. It's the last section of the bill. And in essence, what it does is it allows public agencies, in our case the Public Utility Commission, the option of providing people a full video or audio recording in lieu of providing written minutes. It also provides the protection if the person wants to have something in writing, we would provide a written transcript. It sort of emanates from, we have multiple meetings because it's a three-person commission. We've noticed that every time we want to discuss anything, we have to post it and have a public meeting, and our staff spends a lot of time transcribing into minutes that no one ever asked for. If they want something from us, they usually want our written order in the end on a rate case, or they want specific transcript because they don't like our order and they want to take it to court, then minutes are not particularly helpful. So this provides an alternative to that, and I think it ends up saving the public some dollars and makes people a little happier, I hope.
All right.
Simple.
Thank you. And the committee now knows we're functioning as a subcommittee. Since Ted Ferrioli's whereabouts are unknown. All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Your testimony. ACLU, Andrea Meyer, you've been waiting with bated breath to come chat about this.
Chairman, it's a member of the committee.
Give me the short version, will you?
Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director of the ACLU. I will try to give you the short time, but I hope I have an opportunity, at least on this bill today, to be able to share our strong opposition to this and why, because there's been a lot raised, and I want to be able to adequately have a chance to address that. I've spoken before about the public records laws and the importance of them and the need to keep them open. This is a public institution that we're speaking of doing the public's work. With that said, we support Section 1 of the bill, which was the original bill that, in fact, adds email addresses to the opportunity for those to have that withheld from the public record. But what this amendment that was put on the House side does is secretize the public access to a broad range of information related to animal research. Currently, as it's already been talked about a little bit, Oregon law does allow for an individual, that could be a contractor, that could be a janitor, any individual under ORS 192445, and it's in the first page of the bill that you have before you, to seek removal of their home address, telephone number, electronic mail, and I believe there's other legislation related to Social Security numbers as well. But I want to address, beyond the fundamental premise behind the public records law and the antithetical approach that this is to that, the need for watchdog organizations and the media to ensure that animal research is being done in our community in the most safe and effective way. And this is not simply theoretical, and it's not theoretical to OHSU. The Willamette Week could not be here today. They wanted to be. Richard Meeker did. But I have a correspondence from Phil Schrog.
You mean John Schrog?
Excuse me. Thank you. John Schrog.
I know that periodical well.
Right. Regardless of what one thinks of the periodical, they have done, Phil Dowdy, who you may know as well, did many stories on OHSU and its animal research. He could not be here today. He is in Seattle. But he uncovered abuses by researchers at OHSU. Sorry, I had wanted to be a little bit more organized today. It's not usually my style to be this disorganized, but I'm trying to summarize.
Mr. Chair? I'm sorry, Andrea, I missed the first part of this.
Sure.
But, I am very interested in ensuring that there are responsible research practices at OHSU. On the other hand, I don't want the researchers bombed, shot at, harassed. What do we do?
It goes without saying that the ACLU does not support any criminal acts, and law enforcement should work with them. There can be stalking orders. There are ways to take steps. But I want to just point out for the record, when we talk about the need to have whistleblowers, when we talk about the need for the media to have the opportunity to ensure that we know what's going on, that this isn't just theoretical. OHSU, the research center, used a procedure known as electroejaculation in its practices of housing many animal research animals in individual cages. This was only because of the Willamette Week's hard work in getting these records, and Phil Dowdy could be here to tell you in far more detail how excruciating it was. He was denied access to records. They had to let some of it go. It was a fight to get what was the public records to disclose this story. So what I have on the front page is John's note of last night indicating Willamette Week's concerns, and then one of the stories summarizing the what they got from the records that they finally obtained, exposing both the electroejaculation procedures, which researchers in the communities across the country deplored, and that has been changed, as well as one researcher's misuse of Reese's monkeys who chewed their and ripped their own flesh. Now, I'm not going to go into detail.
Senator Ringo.
The prior testimony indicated that all of the research procedures were described in writing, and I don't remember the name of the document, but that description was subject to the Public Records Act.
Okay.
So that here. These procedures that you just described should have been documented and subject to public disclosure.
Chairman and Senator Ringo, they may be. It is looking for a needle in a haystack. Okay, there are over 3,000 plus animals up there. The reporters and the folks I've talked to will tell you they need the name. Why? Two things. One, if I've got the name of the researcher, I can get the names of the animals that they are working with and check the status of those animals. Two, because the record request is so broad, here's what's going to happen. They're going to be charged such an enormous amount of money to be able to access the documents because they don't know what they're looking for. That they will never be able
Senator
to
Ringo.
Find it.
Senator Ringo.
When you say charged an enormous amount of money, you're talking about for the copies of the records?
For the searches of the records, let alone then the copies.
Are the documents not made available in a way such that the public can do the search?
Chairman, Senator Ringo, I would let OHSU answer, but it is my understanding, no, they don't have, this is not like going to City Hall and saying, can I take a look at some of the permits and I can leaf through them or whatever documents might be available at the library. These are closely held. In fact, Willamette talked about in their story, and Phil Dowdy to me in a long note last night, talked about how difficult it was to access these records. Now, I want to give you one more thing. I didn't want to hand it all out because I wanted to explain what I was providing to you. What I'm handing you, and what I heard this morning from OHSU was, we have a very real problem of personal safety of our employees. This is not a theoretical threat. It is a real one. The names, home addresses, and telephone numbers are used. The first thing they need is the name. The name is what they want. I have handed out to you a few things. And first, I'm going to, before we get to that, the other part of the bill talks about the location. The other, there's an aspect of the thing about secretizing the location. I went on the website last night. I'm a little tired because I spent the wee hours finding very interesting things, which I've just handed you. But what I didn't hand you was the Primate Center's tours that they provide to folks, including viewing the animal areas to high schoolers and public tours. The location and address of the research center up on their website. But more disturbing to me last night, I really have to say, was the fact that with a few clicks and no hidden agenda here by the Primate Center, I could find many doctors, their photographs, and my printer doesn't do justice to the adequacy of the photograph, describing their, gives their name, it describes their work. Elliot Spindle and his coworkers are studying the mechanisms of, by which smoking during pregnancy harms the fetus. Their investigations involve mice that bear targeted mutations of nicotine receptors, as well as monkeys and humans.
Okay, Andrea, doesn't the fact that you were able to find it so readily just speak to the fact that OHSU is not going to use this particular law in some broadly restrictive manner?
Chair Minnis, what this says to me is that we are providing a very rare exception into our public records laws under the argument that right today OHSU is taking all steps necessary to ensure the safety and the privacy of their researchers, and that's why we need this, when at the same time on their very own website they're providing that information. So it suggests to me that there's something more going on here.
Okay. I mean, I think the essence of this, if I'm catching the drift, I think OHSU intends to use this in a fairly narrow fashion. I mean, clearly by the fact that they willingly posted information that's of general interest. I mean, that would be, I think, reasonable. It seems to me it would be contrary to the best interest of OHSU to take a very restrictive view of all of this, this information, apply it very broadly. That would create even more controversy and more criticism of what they're doing, not less.
Chairman, if there are hurdles put up, I mean, either it's necessary because they've taken all steps and they still fear the security. And I just was shocked last night to discover they have not taken all steps. So either it's necessary because they've taken all steps and this is the last bastion. This is the last place. Please help us. And they haven't done that. But in addition, their track record with reporters, there's litigation going on with one in terms of the costs they want to charge is enormous. And Phil Dowdy, who had hurdle after hurdle, and they were ready to sue. But here's the problem with suing. I mean, they talked about the process you go through. You go to the DA, and you ask the DA to do something. And bottom line, if the government doesn't do anything to pull these documents, you go to court. That costs a lot of money. And yes, for the public interest, the news media should be doing that. But they don't always have the resources and the timelines to be able to. Nothing like delay stops the ability to get information out. I can tell you that it was Phil Dotti wrote here without knowing the name, and he exposed a lot of this stuff going on at OHSU. I would have never known what medical records for what research study to request. Without the names of the researchers, you are flying blind. You cannot connect the studies with the people who do them and thus trace whatever problems may or may not exist in the studies. I mean, the ACLU today is not here urging or trying to protect those who are engaged in criminal conduct, but it is very serious when we look at such broad language as this to sweep in what our public entity is doing, including the names. Now, Representative Nolan attempted to address the concerns and work with the party. She could not be here today. I'm handing.
But didn't Representative Nolan vote for the bill?
Here, I wish you were here today. What she has told me, and she certainly can correct it if I misspeak.
A matter of public record.
She voted for the bill with the understanding that on this side, her concerns would be addressed with amendments.
Oh, it's not the message that was communicated to me.
Okay, that's what she told me as of yesterday. These are her amendments. She was, using my own words, I inferred she was quite distressed over what had happened. She met with us on Friday with this quite similar language to what I'm handing to you. She was awaiting responses from the party yesterday. I went and talked to her. I do not have the impression that anyone else did. This dash 7 amendments basically puts the home address, personal telephone number, electronic mail, and social security number in the exceptions, and then puts the business address and location. What is not here is the name. But this puts it in the 501, and this was something that Representative Nolan asked the parties to consider. Do I love it? No. Can I live with it? Yes, because it does not make it impossible for watchdog groups who are engaged in illegal activity and the media to be able to go ensure that what is happening at any facility that is receiving our huge amounts of public money is doing a good job.
Sure. Senator Ringo.
You would accept this amendment that removes all the personal information except the name, correct?
Senator Minnis, Senator Ringo, correct.
Now, could you step through with me exactly how knowing a person's name is useful to you? Is it so that you could call the person at work and talk to them? Is it so that you could try to track them down at home and talk to them there? I mean, exactly what can you do with that name?
Senator Minnis, Chairman, Senator Ringo, a few things. First of all, I think as Senator Walker mentioned in the beginning, I'm not sure you caught that, if a researcher comes from somewhere else and has a bad track record, the first thing is for the public to know who has been brought on and to be able to look and see, does researcher John Doe have a terrible track history somewhere else in treating animals? Should we need to know that, and do we want them there? Absolutely important. And there is a bit of a bad history at OHSU. Much good is happening there, but there's some bad. So that's the first thing, to know the name. And in fact, the federal law has required that animals be treated to a certain standard. And the only way to ensure that is to look at how the research has been doing it. Okay, next thing. I want to know how the five monkeys are being treated by, again, John Doe III. Because I've heard rumors, there's some talks that something bad is going on with their monkeys. If I don't know their name to begin with, I just hear there's five monkeys being treated. There's 3,000. How do I request information and understand what's going on with one research project and get to those five monkeys? Well, I have reporters saying that they can't, and then they want to call up and talk to you, sure, or contact you through OHSU to find out what's going on, what's your story, or to be able to go to OHSU and say, we're hearing that some animals are being housed improperly, they're biting their hands, you know, they're biting themselves, and that's what the story goes on to.
Right. If you have the numbers of those monkeys or the designation of the experiment by some number, wouldn't that lead you to the same place?
Again, Senator Minnis, Senator Ringo, no. It wouldn't. The needle in the haystack of the kind of documents that they're talking about that they still have, the voluminous documents they still have, sort of defeats their argument. It's a huge quantity of documents. You're looking for something very specific, something going wrong with the animals. One of the ways you do that is if there's a person with a bad track record. One of the ways. And the other way is to be able to ask for very specific documents. And if there's a rumor, it's going to be about a researcher, a research project. But if you don't know what it is, you can't ask for it.
Senator Ferrioli has a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to acknowledge the passion with which this witness is approaching this issue. I can see that it's a very important question, and perhaps not just related to the freedom of information, but more to the purpose to which the information is being put. But that's, I guess, the thing that causes me to wonder what the balance point is between the anti-vivisectionist movement, which is still very healthy and alive today in our society, it's morphed into animal rights issues. But clearly the people that are advocates of direct action in this regard need the very information that you're talking about. They need a name. They need a location. They need an information that will allow them to track and target individuals. And that may be based on rumor and innuendo, just as you've testified today. There may be a rumor of somebody who's abusive. And that person becomes a target then for surveillance by the direct action advocates. And that person will be followed and dogged and subjected to harassment. And virtually anywhere that person goes, the project becomes suspect. And so what happens is people, in fact, get targeted. They can't work in the field. If they do work in the field, they attract the attention of the direct action advocates. And I'm not sure that's something that the ACL shouldn't look into in terms of protecting people from that kind of baiting. I mean, if they were called a socialist or a communist and they attracted that kind of negative attention from a sector of our society, ACL, you'd be all over this issue in protection of that person. So I guess I'm wondering, what you know, at least do you acknowledge the fact that there are people out there who advocate direct action, who have bad intentions and bad objectives and need this information in order to interdict research and to destroy the good public policies to which that research is being put?
Chairman and Senator Farioli, absolutely, it's going on. And I said earlier, and I'll repeat, go after them. Use the full extent of the law. If they're being harassed, as you described, followed, get a stalking order. That's the role when criminal acts, when things go from speech to crime, that's the role of law enforcement, first of all.
Okay.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
Because you raised a number of things. And I wanted to respond. I do believe that there's a false sense of security being promoted by this legislation. I believe that those who are so intent in doing criminal activity will uncover, will unearth, will find, maybe accurately, maybe not, people who are engaged in animal research. They will get them if that's their intent, and we need law enforcement, and I'm quite certain that even federal law enforcement is already looking into those folks who are doing that. But what troubles me is what this does is not protect the researchers really from those folks. It protects it from the media oversight, the whistleblowers, those who are not going to go to extreme lengths to track down individuals, those who permissibly use the public records to track and ensure that what's going on in our public institutions is done wisely. And again, I would simply add, OHSU here is telling you today that they have taken every step possible, that they are frightened today. I cannot tell you how shocked and disturbed I was to find the information on the website last night. Something more is going on. Why hasn't that been removed? That is fodder. Because our position is that what is public record does not always need to go on the internet to make it really easy for you to get. You make a public request. They may ask you to put it in writing, and they'll send it to you, and they'll charge you. And that's a roadblock and a hurdle. That makes it a little harder. I am shocked that they have made it so easy. It's on the website for me to find last night.
Mr. Chair, I have some follow-up.
And just to hang on, just before, there are people waiting for other bills. We're going to set over to 2425, 2118, 2278, 3351, 3370, 3371, 3372, and 3389.
Thank you, Mr.
And I apologize, but that's the way it goes.
There is clearly a problem with abuse of animals. I know that there's been a case at the Oregon Zoo, at the, you know, the zoo where there was an abuse of an animal caught on videotape, resulted in the firing of an employee that was obviously not qualified or capable of making care decisions. And I know there's been some changes at OHSU as a result of the information that came out of the primary center reporting. But I guess I still hold that the direct action activists aren't subject to any public disclosure requirements. And there are conspiracies in the direct action community to destroy research. And we don't have any access to that information because these organizations are not public organizations. They're conspiratorial. And the media doesn't seem to want to root out the direct action conspiracies. They're very interested in attacking the issues in the establishment, but they're not very active in going after the perpetrators of these crimes. I'm looking for the balance point. You know, I don't know why you should be outraged that it steps on the internet when the fact is that the media in Oregon and the public laws, disclosure laws, have demanded it. And it seems like you're arguing this perspective from this issue from both perspectives. Either we are looking prospectively to protect future projects that, you know, the state's got a $200 million investment in. You know, the legislature just authorized OHSU to use bonds to do some very heavy research up there. And some of that stuff will be sensitive. And I'm not sure that the future of that organization isn't much more security sensitive than it's been in the past. And there's no point in pulling stuff off the web that's already been on the web. But I don't think that's the focus of this legislation. This legislation is prospective.
Chairman and Senator Farioli, I do not believe there's anything in the public record laws that require anything to be put on the internet. Okay? So I do not believe that to be, we're waiting for this law to give us permission to remove that. First of all, it is not.
All right, Andrea. Thank you very much. Final points.
I would urge you to contemplate the Dash 7s as a more moderate approach before we start doing some very dangerous tinkering to the public record laws in light of the issue and what I truly, truly believe is going to be a false sense of security, but making it far harder for legal watchdog groups and watchdog media to alert us to things going on.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher. I represent the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. People have been talking about our position, and I'm happy to put our position on the record here. When we looked at this bill and this amendment, we too were concerned about the things that Senator Farioli and Senator Ringel raised. What is the balance here between the criminal activity of some extremist groups and the right to information in the public records law? To be very frank with you, we have not yet found that balance. I have a number of suggestions, which I gave on the House side, and we are on this bill in the sense of saying, at this point in time, I think that we need to lean toward protecting the rights of the individuals who are involved in supply and research and so forth, and look for a solution to the public records issue. In the whole, this sort of an exception does not belong in the public records law. If we had to amend 445 to allow individuals who were targeted to specifically exempt themselves, that would be our preference. But I understand the situation in which the people at OHSU feel that they're in. So we've taken the position right now that this is a temporary fix, that we need to sit down with OHSU and with the individual civil rights advocates and find some way, like we did in the eco-terrorism bill, to protect people from the actions of the extremists and at the same time protect the rights of the people who have legitimate access to the information. So I'm here today to say shortly, I hope that this bill, and we'll work to see that this issue is back in front of the legislature in 2005, but right now we can't see a better solution to the short-term fix of the problem than to deal with the threats to the individuals by exempting some of the names. If you have any other questions on where the newspapers are on this, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Gallagher? All right. We'll do a work session. I don't know if there's... Is anybody... Larry Campbell was here for a minute. I assume he was representing SAFE. He seems to have disappeared. He's not here now. It's a work session on 3093, and I want to talk to the committee and find out where we are.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rago.
Well, for me, I intended to support the bill. Andrea has made some compelling arguments and is obviously passionate about the issue, and it makes me tend to want to look a little bit closer and perhaps to talk with OHSU a little bit further about the protections for the animals. Andrea mentioned she thinks something else is going on. I guess I'd like to know what that is. But I guess in sum, I would like to look at this a little closer.
All right. And the A6 amendment, the A8 amendment.
Where are you?
A8 is the safe public records. A6 is the emergency clause.
The safe, I'm fine with that.
Senator Starr. Senator Fairley.
Mr. Chairman, the A6 appears only to make an emergency clause.
Correct.
The A8 codifies the recent court decision. I'd be good with both those.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if you want to adopt those two amendments, that's fine.
All right. Senator Ringo.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the A6 and the A8 amendments to 3093.
Senator Ringo moves the adoption of the A6 and the A8 amendments to House Bill 3093. Discussion?
The
safe amendment regarding public records codifying the Court of Appeals case and then the emergency clause. Any further discussion? Any objection? Motion passes. All right, the last issue. Senator Ringo is dissenting at this point on the bill. No HSU, where are you, Senator Ringo?
I'm supporting the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And
well, Mr. Chairman, I understand the verdict was out for some of the discussion. I mean, there is an A7 amendments here. I don't really know if you've looked at those or what your position is on those. And Senator Burdick, as I mentioned a minute ago, I walked into this room intending to vote for the bill, and I still tend to do that. But there were some pretty passionate arguments by the ACLU, and I would just like to take a little bit closer look at whether there's another way to address the concerns. Maybe there's not. But
well, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. I had been under the understanding that I was going to be in on the discussion, and then I was not in on the discussion. I couldn't participate because I was not in on it. So, I'd be happy to.
You were not here when the newspaper association, Mr. Gallagher, suggested that this issue was intended to bring it back in the 2005 session, which is consistent with the statements as we
were taking.
It's a potential abuse of this. It is. I guess my take on it is that the OHSU would, again, intend to use this in a very narrow sense, since they're already publishing it.
I guess just the thought is maybe we should put a sunset clause on it. I mean, just to give them some encouragement so that they have to come back and review it. Just a thought.
Well, that would certainly be consistent with what I have said to OHSU and to others, which is if we put something like this in, it can certainly be taken out because I am not interested in seeing legitimate public inquiry suppressed by this or anything else.
All right, Mr. Chamoff, could you come up here for just a second? Sunsetting the language specific to OHSU in this part of the bill, how difficult would it be to craft an amendment to do that?
Mr. Chair, what we would do would be to have what we call a double amend. You would have the provision that's in the bill, and then we would have another section that took effect in 2 years that removed the language so that the statute would go back to the way that it read before.
All right. And I think what I want to do, because I'd like to move the bill, and I know that the Secretary of the Senate goes nuts when I do this, but I'd like to suspend the rules for the purpose of adopting a conceptual amendment since I've got Mr. Chamoff here. He understands and knows what we're doing and how to do this. Is there any objection to suspending the rules for the purpose of adopting a sunset to that OHSU provision?
Mr. Chair, if I could. So how does that work?
Just like a council's objection.
Mr. Chair, we can bring this back. We can bring this back.
It's time. It's time on the schedule. We should get to 9 bills that were in front of us today. We had a little faux pas on scheduling for Monday. It's just a matter of schedule. So, I mean, we can, if you want, okay, let's do this. Let's bring it back Thursday. Can you get the amendment drafted by Thursday?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, we'll do that.
Ms. Campbell.
Mr. Chair.
We have adopted the A8 amendment as the House Bill 3093 dealing with the clarification of the Court of Appeals case and public records issue. You were here earlier, you left, and you're here now, so since you're here, perhaps you have something to say about that.
Thank you, Senator Minnis, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Larry Campbell representing State Corporation. And there's the objection that we would have to that amendment at this particular point in time is that we fully expect that we will be appealing the decision that I think you may be using as a reference to make the amendment. And we would appreciate it if you would delay any action until the courts have had an opportunity to fully implement their decision. So that's the only reason that...
All right. I've read the case. I agree with the case. I agree with their conclusion. So it would not be my intent.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad you're not a member of the Supreme Court under those circumstances.
My conjecture would be, although I'm not an attorney, that the Supreme Court will affirm the Court of Appeals on that issue. It seems fairly clear to me. But, again, I'm not an attorney. I'm a novice and a neophyte in this process. But it seems pretty clear, and that's been the one issue that I've always consistently stated, that I do believe those records are public. I would object, as you know, to moving money around and moving it into the general government expenditure column, but I do think that access to those records are imperative. So, but I do understand what you're saying, too. Any questions for Mr. Campbell? Will we have him in our committee?
It's such a pleasure to be here.
We get that comment a lot, usually from the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We will have to propose a bill under those circumstances.
Understand.
I guess is that you've got that pretty well wired.
Nothing's for sure. I understand. I know that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll get the amendment drafted. Bring it back Thursday for the amendment. We're adjourned.